Welcome to the AI Hustle Podcast, the podcast where we break down the latest in AI news, tools, and interview experts helping you hustle and do more using AI. If you've been following the podcast for a while, you'll know that over the last 6 months, I've been working on a stealth AI startup. Of the hundreds of projects I've covered, this is the one that I believe has the greatest potential. So today I'm excited to announce AI Box. AI Box is a no-code AI app building platform paired with the App Store for AI that lets you monetize your AI tools. The platform lets you build apps by linking together AI models like ChatGPT, Midjourney, and 11 Labs. Eventually, we'll integrate with software like Gmail, Trello, and Salesforce, so you can use AI to automate every function in your organization. To get notified when we launch and be one of the first to build on the platform, you can join the waitlist at aibox.ai. The link is in the show notes. We are currently raising a seed round of funding. If you're an investor that is focused on disruptive tech, I'd love to tell you more about the platform. You can reach out to me at jaden@aibox.ai. I'll leave that email in the show notes. Welcome to the AI Chat Podcast. I'm your host, Jaden Schaefer. Today on the podcast, we have the pleasure of having Brian Raymond with us. So Brian Raymond just raised $25 million for his new AI startup, which is Unstructured AI. He is the CEO and co-founder of this startup. And prior to founding this, Brian has experience in the AI industry. He worked with some of his co-founders at Primer AI, which is focused on building and deploying NLP solutions for businesses. His professional journey is not limited just to the private sector. He also served in the U.S. intelligence community. He worked in the White House during the Obama administration, and he had a run at the CIA. So leveraging his unique experiences, Brian is leading the charge in making AI technology more accessible and efficient by addressing critical data processes in this entire AI field. So Brian, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
So, you know, it's super exciting, I'm imagining, for you to be working on this company, and super excited that, and congratulations on this new round of funding that you were able to recently raise. Can you give us a brief overview of Unstructured and kind of tell us a little bit about what led you to co-found this company?
Yeah, absolutely. So at Unstructured, we're just trying to make it cheap, fast, and easy to take any files containing natural language data and to render them in a format that's ready for an embedding endpoint, a vector database, or a machine learning pipeline. And so what that means in practice is, and we'll get into this later on, is taking things like PDFs and PowerPoints and XML and HTML, and then normalizing that to JSON that you can clean and curate really easily, and then and focus on the data science, not the data pre-processing. What really drove us to launch Unstructured was practical experience. So Primer, fantastic company, really at the leading edge over the last several years of the natural language processing space. There we were fine-tuning, BERT-based models, transformer models more broadly, orchestrating them into pipelines, building apps on top of them, and deploying against customer data. And we didn't need another data labeling platform, a data model serving or model monitoring platform. Really good solutions available for those. Everything slowed down in terms of the time to value and the cost to value on taking customer data, the natural language data that was important to them. Okay. And being able to transform that into a machine-readable format.
Okay, very cool. So I imagine, right, you're working at, prior to this, Primer AI, and this is, like you said, a really kind of bleeding-edge AI company. I imagine that was really exciting and awesome. What was that like, thinking about taking that next step and starting your own company? What made you, decide you could or should make that step?
Well, generally, this is an oversimplification, but you have companies that emerge from technology. You worked at some cool developing some new techniques or methods at Uber or Meta or wherever, and now you want to take that and build a company around that. We were kind of the opposite. We were a problem in search of technology, and so when I was there at Primer, we looked around. We talked to almost all of the data integration players in the space, and none of them were really focused on this problem space. We looked at some of the intelligent document processing providers that have fabulous solutions, but those weren't really tailored for this. And then talked to others and interested, how are all of you doing this? And everyone said, we're doing it the same way. We're doing it through completely manually and specific to every customer. We're just doing regexes and Python scripts and OCR, and it's slow and it's ugly and it ruins our margins on these contracts because we have huge professional services associated with it. And so at that point, I was like, this is an area that urgently needs technology, right? This problem. And so that was really the light bulb moment to say, hey, this is a big enough problem that we can go build a company around it.
And that's super cool. So I know you have some co-founders with you on the company. When you made that move, was this something where you guys were all sitting around one day talking about, you know, what kind of solutions should we have? Or was this one of your specific ideas and you kind of brought the other players in? How did that conversation go, kind of building the team there?
Sure. Yeah. So I left Primer and been working on this for a few months and had been doing lots of user interviews and others and started thinking about, okay, what sort of the founding team need to look like? And I needed someone who's fabulous on infrastructure and architecture and another one who's fabulous on data science. And I thought to myself, okay, who knows these problems better than anyone? And Matt Robinson, who I think the world of, came on to lead our data science. He worked at CIA with me. He worked at Capital One, Primer, another company called Rebellion Defense. Had really deep and intimate knowledge of this problem from a data science side. And then Craig Wolf, who leads our infrastructure, he deep expertise from Red Hat and then 5 years of Primer on building enterprise solutions around natural language processing. And so one, I just love working with them, but two, world-class expertise for this particular problem in particular.
That sounds amazing. And I know the team makes a huge difference. So given a lot of people say that data processing and kind of the prep time on that takes about 80% of data science time, how over at Instructured are you really focusing on optimizing that process?
Yeah, absolutely. I think credit the Alex Ratner and the folks at Snorkel have focused a lot on data-centric AI. I think that kind of whiplashed back around to model-centric AI over the last 8 months, and now it's coming back around to refocusing on data-centric AI. And they're primarily focused on annotated data and being able to have really high-quality training data for the models. What we're focused on is really to the left of that. And it's suppose you want to utilize Llama 2 and put it on top of your internal company data so that you can accelerate workflows. How do you get that into Pinecone or Weaviate or Chroma or these vector databases? The way that we're doing it is we're consolidating that down to a single API. So you can have 100,000 files in an S3 bucket. You can just point it at our API. We detect what type of file it is, route it to the appropriate strategy, and render into JSON and rejoin it with all of the other data. And so really collapsing a lot of the complexity around that. And so so get data scientists out of the business of data, deep data engineering, and give that time back to them to focus on modeling.
Okay, very cool. Could you maybe give us some examples of the types of documents that you, when you talk about this, you know, that Unstructured's, I think their file transformation NLP model, what kind of documents is it really capable of handling or do you focus on?
Yeah, no, great question. So right now we support more than 25 different file types. And as files come in, we detect the file extension and then route it to the appropriate strategy. And so let me unpack that.
Okay.
For say a text file, really easy to get access to that natural language data. And mm-hmm. So the task there is extracting it from that text file, but then we also clean and curate it. So we make sure that make sure there's no weird white spaces or Unicode characters or something odd there. But then also in the curation side, we're annotating that each chunk of text with the what we call a document element that is tied to. So if it's a title, we tag it as a title. We're able to automatically detect that using NLP models and more body text lists, et cetera. And the idea there is that you don't want to send everything into a vector database, and you may not want to send everything into a model pipeline. You got to be thoughtful and data-centric about what you put in front of that model. And so for a text file, it's relatively simple. We have blended approaches for other file types all the way up to models that we'll be talking more about in September that we've pre-trained. that treat every image, every file as an image. And then we have around 20 different categories of document elements, and we're able to extract that data with an extremely high level of precision without any particular training. So you don't need to like provide input on the document layout. We've pre-trained this model on millions and millions of documents and dozens of languages, and it just works. It's just
amazing. Oh my God. Very cool. We'll look forward to hearing more about that in September when we make that announcement, I'm sure. When you kind of talk about interacting with other things, how does Unstructured interact with things like customer relationship management software and other data sources?
Totally. So we're doing two things there. So on, call it the left side of what we're building, we're building upstream data connectors, and we're inspired by FiveTran. These are maintained by us, so we're continuously testing them, but we have our own abstraction for them, and so that they're resilient to interruptions, that they're easy to parallelize, and they're very sensitive to versioning, and so you can grab net new data very easily. And so we have that for like SharePoint and Azure Blob and Google Drive and Notion. And I think we have, as of yesterday, 18, and this will grow to about 40 into the fall.
Very cool.
And then on the right-hand side, we have a bunch of what we're just calling staging utilities. So if you want to chunk it according to a particular attention window size, tokenize, vectorize, map the JSON schema to a specific vendor downstream, we have a lot of these utilities out of the box. And so you don't need to do any additional data munging before you go engage with whoever's to the right of us.
Okay. Very cool. How do you integrate? So, you know, again, talk about integrations. How do you kind of handle the whole, and how does Unstructured kind of handle integrations with people like LangChain and vector databases and, you know, MongoDB, Atlassian Vector Search, all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, no, great question. Probably the best way to describe it is native. And so with LangChain and Llama Index on the orchestration side, with MongoDB Atlas, and with Weave8 and others, extremely simple plug into the right of us, and you can leave with data that's immediately ingestible. We were actually there and sponsored Harrison and LangChain's kickoff party back in February. We were the first company to tie in with them.
Oh, that's awesome.
And Weave8 and Mongo are both invested in us. And so there's a really special ecosystem of open source solutions that's emerged to help power this new LLM stack. And we're doing everything we can to make it effortless for our users to plug into that ecosystem and realize the value of those solutions that sit downstream of us.
Okay, very cool. That's awesome. So correct me if I'm wrong, but you transformed from offering an open source suite of data processing tools to launching a commercial API. Is that correct?
Yeah, and the API is actually free right now. So in terms of like the way that we're delivering value, we start off with the Python library, and we heard user feedback. This is a pain in the ass to install because we have a ton of dependencies to handle the long tail of all these different file types. And so we rushed and we got some containers out, and we've continued to add new containers for different hardware types. And a lot of the folks that are building on top of LLMs and front-end developers said, hey, we want something even easier. And so we were excited to announce last week the rollout of our actually free API now. And so you can go to our website and grab an API key and start hammering that if you want. What we'll be introducing over the coming weeks are kind of tiered APIs, so you can have access to GPUs and dedicated instances. And so we can bring down the latency there. And then later on in the fall and in the winter, we'll be talking more about our enterprise platform that will have everything that you'll need in order to move these LLM solutions into production. So we imagine a world where you're continuously grabbing data, say every minute or 15 seconds from Slack and from Google Drive and from email, et cetera, and wanting to move that into a vector database. And so it can accelerate and power workflows across the enterprise, and we want to be the backbone of that, making that a reality.
Okay, very cool. So given your size, and I'm not 100% sure, how many users or companies do you have currently like interfacing with your product, your technology?
That's a That's a great question and a really hard one to answer, given that we're open source.
Right.
Some of the things that we're looking at in our Slack, we have like almost 600 people now, and at least 100 companies represented there. We're about 2,800 GitHub repos use us.
Okay.
Those are open source repos, and we're quickly closing in on around 1 million downloads from in terms of pip installs, and so moving very quickly, kind of across the board there.
That's very cool. So I guess given this, you know, 1 million installs and all these different people, different places, different corporations using you, how do you measure the success and impact of your product on businesses?
Yeah, I think the what matters at the end of the day is that the individual data scientist at, you know, company X that's prototyping something cool with LangChain and with Weaviate, that they're successful and that they're able to move that into production. That's what we care about. It may be a different architecture that they're using, but we are laser focused on enterprise adoption of LLMs, and that's going to come by data scientists inside those organizations being successful. Look, historically, about 80%, 80 to 90% of machine learning initiatives within businesses fail, right? And so it's like, how are we going to change the numbers on that? One way is to change the economics and the time required to get the data that's important to you and the knowledge that's important to the organization in front of the model, right? And that's for us, like where we're really focused. But at the end of the day, it comes down to this, us as an ecosystem player of enabling technologies, helping these businesses realize the power, the productivity gains, and the performance gains that LLMs can drive within their businesses.
That's super cool. That's awesome. So of course, you talked a little bit about having starting out as open source and you have a commercial API. Talk to the audience a little bit and I guess explain a little bit what your monetization mechanism and what that overall strategy looks like for you. Because, you know, there's different sides of it. There's the open source side and all of that. And so, yeah, I think a lot of people are curious about that.
So right now, the objective of open source is to remove any barriers to entry for folks that want to prototype. So we want a fabulous solution for file transformation that can that provides a good foundation for successful prototypes. Our vision here and hypothesis is that as these prototypes are successful, you're going to want to continuously grab that data and then push it into vector databases. And what you'll want there, fine-grained user permissioning, you want scheduling, you want a UI, you want SOC 2 compliance, you want HIPAA compliance. You'll need a whole bunch of functionality. You want premium supported connectors that we support over the long term, and we fix them if they break at 2 a.m. And we envision wrapping around that core file transformation technology, all of that additional functionality so that this can be running in serial perpetually into this a living architecture, an LLM-enabled architecture that services HR and sales and R&D and every different aspect of an organization. And so that'll have a license component and uses-based component, hopefully feel like very similar to most of the other data integration providers, but we'll have that open source entry point that you can prototype around.
Okay, very cool. So, you know, as I mentioned earlier when I was kind of giving your intro or whatever, you have had some experience working with the government, working with the CIA. I wonder, like, what influence, if any, do you feel like that your background there in the government would have into kind of your focus and what you're doing today with your current company?
So, it's really elemental to everything that we're doing. And so, when I came into the CIA, I spent most of my time with the director of analysis. It was during kind of the move to cloud and the move and big data. And big data was the mantra at that time, but you didn't have analytics to match the data. Palantir was doing some really cool stuff, mostly around structured data.
Okay.
NLP at the time was still pretty sleepy. So you had enormous volumes of data being collected and being produced, but you didn't have any real mechanism in order to exploit that. At Primer, we did some really interesting work on how to put analytic engines against it. But again, because the ecosystem was still so immature, it was difficult to expand that to lots of different use cases and different user personas within an enterprise. I think now with the advent of LLMs, it's changed like the fundamental economics and the time to value, where you don't need 30 different fine-tuned models on the ML side. If we're right and we help solve a lot of the problems on the pre-processing side, then you're going to be able to realize a lot more value of this big data that's been sitting around for years.
Okay, that's very cool. So I think this is something I've just noticed in tech recently. There is kind of this move in the past away from tech companies like Google, for example, wanting to work with the Department of Defense or any kind of military thing. There was a lot of employees at a lot of companies that were kind of had an aversion to working with anything in defense or technology. And I feel like recently we've kind of seen this trend where the pendulum may be swinging back. There's a bunch of new, interesting startups. There's Palantir, of course. There's Palmer Luckey that has his startup really focusing on defense and whatnot. And I feel like I kind of see a little bit more innovation coming into this. How do you guys view that, and where do you guys stand? Because I know you have some partnerships with, I believe, the U.S. Special Operations Command and some defense agencies and whatnot. So I guess what's the nature of your partnerships there, and how do you kind of view that?
Yeah, I mean, I've looked at the last 10 years as kind of the left coast figuring out how to work with the right coast. And there is some growing pains there. And I think that that's maturing in a really productive way and an exciting way right now. You saw CIA on stage at AWS reInvent last year, which was bizarre.
Right.
Thinking about where we were a few years back. A huge emphasis on responsible AI, on taking bias seriously, and on taking automation really seriously from an ethical consideration, but also a recognition that we in Silicon Valley have a responsibility as well, and that there's a lot of good to be done through our technology as well. And so it's been pretty incredible to see Silicon Valley more broadly rally behind Ukraine, and then also broadly around Europe over the last year and a half. I'll say this, Silicon Valley's made it, I think it's definitely could come back around, and that it's a lot easier. I think there's a lot more space now for conversation around this on how to do it. From, in terms of like the Pentagon and CIA and others, they've made it a lot easier to do business with them too, and have put a lot of structures in place that have provided a lot more confidence, right, to folks on the left coast. And so I really look at it in terms of a maturing relationship that's moving in a really positive direction.
Okay, very cool. Yeah, that's very cool. In what ways would you say this, you just raised $25 million in funding, how would you say this, round of funding is going to impact Unstructured's business and growth plans, and what do you plan on kind of doing with that?
Yeah, absolutely. It's going towards productionizing the platform for enterprises. There is, I think that as an ecosystem of LLM enabling technologies, Unstructured and others have gotten some great tooling out there to prototype. However, if you're at a large financial services organization, at a Walmart, at a General Motors, these are really cool for demos. These are not production ready. And so myself and my peers are racing ahead as quickly as we can in order to mature the solutions that we're working on into actually production grade platforms that they can deploy with confidence. There's technical challenges associated with this in terms of like, how does all this work? And, how do you handle drift and in context learning and RAG based approaches and all this, where it's changing every week. But then there's things that just don't change on the cybersecurity side, on the compliance side, on basic functionality here that needs to be established in order to credibly go into these organizations and meet their needs. And so, from where we sit, we've more than doubled the size of our engineering team in the last 6 weeks. We'll continue to make investments there in order to build as fast as we can. To support those folks that I mentioned earlier in this interview, those individual data scientists that are doing really, really cool prototypes within their organization and are trying to find a pathway to production.
Okay, very cool. So I know, in the process of raising a round of funding, you obviously have to go through some pretty rigorous documentation and background checks and all that kind of stuff. Can you talk a little bit about maybe what were some of the concerns your investors had going into this, and what ultimately helped you to overcome those concerns for them? Speaking of unstructured in the business.
Yeah, totally. I think a few different things. One is uncertainty on what this emerging LLM tech stack is going to look like. Everyone's asking questions on whether or not the service area that they're touching is sufficiently broad to capture enough value, but also not so broad that you never go deep enough to actually generate a huge amount of value. So that's one, just because this is moving so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
This is, you know, an old problem, but everyone that's in my shoes has to address it. Like, how do you turn the corner from open source to a commercial product?
Mm-hmm.
And then three, I think just from a technical standpoint, you got a great idea. How are you actually going to build it? How are you actually going to deliver it? And what's the team that's going to be required? And I think that I got a lot of really great questions around that. Beyond that, just normal stuff. But this is a unique moment that we're in right now, where the world's changing so, so quickly. And so to earn the trust of investors, to make a bet on you, you got to have a really tight plan and a lot of conviction in terms of those different pillars that I talked about.
Okay, very cool. How would you say your relationship with your board members? I know you have Michael Groen and Mike Brown on there. How's that kind of shaped the trajectory of Unstructured, or kind of impacted that?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have some fantastic advisory board members. General Groen and then Mike Brown are fantastic individuals to have in our corner to help navigate the Department of Defense and the public sector more broadly, and to advise on where we're making AI investments. Karan Mahandru, who is our board member, and he led the investment in our A round from Madrona, and then Enrique Salim from Bain Capital Ventures, who is a second board member, and he led our seed and also invested in our A. World-class individuals, know how to build great companies, fantastic VCs, but I think most importantly are builder advocates. And I think we have deep alignment on strategy. And then also just the way that they tend to engage is so practical and so helpful that we're able to, I have both of them in Slack, for example.
Okay.
So we're constantly bouncing stuff off each other. And so really intimate in a positive way.
That's awesome. That's amazing. So talk to me about when you first kind of got this thing started, you first started working on this. What did that look like at the very beginning, the early stages for you, as far as kind of funding it and getting this thing off the ground? Was this something that you began self-funding? Were you immediately looking for angels or, you know, seed round, pre-seed round? What did that process look like for you?
Yeah, it was a let's call it a non-linear process. The first thing I started to do was actually doing user interviews. I actually called and reached out and talked to, I still have the spreadsheet, more than 70 data scientists, and talked to them about how they were grappling with this. And I had dozens of pages of notes in terms of validating the problem and talking about what type of solution that they'd want. And so really kind of put my product hat on for that. I did submit to for Y Combinator and was admitted to that. But at that point I had a decent amount of institutional capital lined up for a pre-seed. And, as I was about to button up the pre-seed, had an opportunity to do a larger seed round with Enrique and the team there at Bain. And so I pulled back on the pre-seed and decided to raise a larger amount from the get-go, so that we'd have more runway in order to actually figure out how the market wanted to consume this, and then also grow the engineering team more rapidly.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. And what was your process? What did that look like as far as reaching out and meeting these people at Bain and institutional investors? Was that like previous connections? You're going for like cold emails? What did that kind of look like for you?
It was too funny. I was previous connections and cold emails. I got Enrique got a hold of me. I was at a movie with my wife and I got a text message. Hey, this is Enrique from Bain. Can we chat? And and I go out of the movie, call him, and he's like, hey, let's make something happen. And honestly, you know, this is probably the single most helpful thing that if someone's in, you know, considering launching something, don't just change on your LinkedIn to working on something new and still startup. And then everyone that's scraping LinkedIn will automatically reach out to you. I should have done that earlier instead of hustling so hard with the pitch deck around the contacts and contacts and contacts. But lesson learned, at least.
That's funny. So that's what happened. You changed it there and that's how he contacted you?
It was everybody else. It was too funny. Like about a week before we closed, I changed it. And then within 24 hours, I started getting a flood of inbounds. And I was like, they must be scraping LinkedIn because now they can see Stealth Star. Never would have thought of that beforehand. Yeah.
That's so funny. That's awesome. So what future developments or I guess expansions can users expect and, you know, potential investors and other people look forward to from Unstructured going into the future?
Yeah, I would say right now we're focused on building the equivalent of a Toyota Corolla.
Okay.
You just want it to be cheap to operate. You can't break it. It's a good daily commuter and it meets all of your needs from that. From there, however, they can expect multimodal. So we're going to be able to ingest audio and video.
Okay.
You're going to see huge speed gains, algorithmic speed gains, as we continue to invest in the underlying architectures of the models and pre-training our own models from scratch. And then also much broader upstream and downstream integrations. And so at the end of the day, it's going to be easier, it's going to be faster, and it's going to be more performant.
Very cool. Very exciting. So if it's been amazing having you on the show today. Amazing picking your brain and learning all of your insights about what's going on in the industry. If companies are interested in using Unstructured, where's the best place for them to find out more about it, to get, you know, access it, to kind of start learning if that's a good fit for their company?
Absolutely. Three options. So one, you can go to GitHub, get everything off of GitHub. Two, off our website, you can go get your API key. It'll be automatically generated and sent to you. Or three, just feel free to email me, brian@unstructured.io. I promise I'll respond.
That's amazing. Well, thank you so much for coming on today, Brian. It's been amazing to talk to you. For the listeners, thank you so much for listening to the AI Chat podcast. Make sure to rate us wherever you get your podcasts, and we will see you next time.
If you are looking for an innovative and creative community of people using ChatGPT, you need to join our ChatGPT creators community. I'll drop a link in the description to this podcast. We'd love to see you there where we share tips and tricks of what is working in ChatGPT. It's a lot easier than a podcast as you can see screenshots, you can share and comment on things that are currently working. So if this sounds interesting to you, check out the link in the comment. We'd love to have you in the community.
Thanks for tuning in to the AI Hustle podcast. If you could do us a massive favor, we would really, really appreciate it if you could leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts. This helps people find the podcast. It helps people know this is a good place to go. And we would really, really appreciate it as it helps us continue to bring on incredible guests and share incredible content for you to listen to.